If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Annabelle Comer established Tea Rebellion to transform the tea industry through direct trade, transparency, and single origin sourcing. Since its launch in 2018, the B Corp certified brand has won more than 20 international tasting awards. A graduate of the University of California at Davis and the London Business School, Comer holds degrees in agricultural economics and business management and has conducted field work in Latin America. She divides her time between Toronto, Canada, and London, UK. Thanks so much for joining us. Will you begin with an overview of the project?
Okay, sure. Happy to do that. So the Regenerative Tea Action Project has its genesis in conversation with farmers about regenerative and really the soils, climate challenges, and where we currently are with nature and biodiversity on many tea farms, and the recognition that the supply chain can't be pushing for yet another certification.
What's the alternative?
It needs to be farmer practice led, and also there needs to be rewards and commercial benefits to adopting these new things on farms. So that came out from conversations talking with farmers in my travels, basically. In parallel with COP last year in November, we got a bunch of people from the tea industry together and had this idea of why don't we launch an action project with the entire value chain. So there are farmers, there are retailers, there are also tea institutions like European Specialty Tea Association. There are also some buyers now talking and joining these talks, even though officially they haven't really signed up to it yet. So basically, the idea is represent the whole value chain and together de-risk that change process for farmers and also bring everyone up to understanding of what are the challenges around climate, soil carbon, additionality, biodiversity on farms. These last 6 months, we've done first a little bit of what's the project and what are we trying to achieve and why are we doing this with lots of people in different quite collaborative calls. And then we quite quickly moved into a phase which I would call common baseline setting or upskilling or bringing everyone on the same page with regard to four topics. So the last one we just did was on financing and the business case for regenerative. Then we also did one on certification, where we had the Regenerative Organic Alliance there speaking, and we also looked at some other regenerative standards. And then we had one on biodiversity, and then another session which was looking at soil organic carbon. So those four topics were chosen by the group of people in these initial kind of target setting workshops as one, some that we want to spend more time thinking about. So in each of those 2 hour sessions, we went into deep into the topics, the challenges. We had some external speakers, and those sessions are now available soon as webinars on, you know, publicly. Right now, we haven't uploaded them yet, but they will be. And so we've come to the end of that first 6 months, and the plan is to now go into, after a short period of various policy and fundraising between now and December, to go into actual piloting. And we've set out a project pitch, as it were, where we're reaching out to various people who could fund this, because that next phase, if it is about changing practices on the ground, helping people to take data, helping people to access finance, helping people to certify, it certainly requires some funds to support. So that's where we are. We want to really focus on fundraising and building a toolkit. And then the next phase will be focused on piloting and action on the farm.
Let's talk about fundraising for a moment.
Perfect. Okay. So investing in the soil at farm level, my understanding is what needs to happen is people first need to understand what the baseline is. What is the current And there are various metrics you can take, but really how good is your soil at the beginning? How much carbon does it have? How active is it, like nutrients? How much water does it retain? And how fertile is that soil? You need that baseline because that opens up a lot of other things. And part of the challenge we have is that people already go ahead and implement good things on their farms, but they don't know where they started with. And that creates in the world of voluntary carbon markets a potential problem after on that, where the good adopters, the early adopter, are penalized in terms of their potential returns on that investment. But those are the kind of things you want to measure on the farm. And then there are things, practices you want to implement on the farms around increasing that soil organic matter, around increasing the ability to retain moisture, around increasing the microbial activity in the soils, and nutrients, et cetera. And ideally, using organic materials for that rather than inorganic fertilizer for various reasons. When we talked about financing and funding for the project, there are actually three areas that we would like to support with in that next phase. And that first one is around helping basically collect regenerative tea data. There is very little out there because it's such a new topic, and that spans obviously carbon and biodiversity and nature, but a lot of the carbon part is focused on soils. Help to develop a toolkit. Develop that toolkit that people can just have it download. If you're a farmer somewhere and you're interested in finding out, well, there's so many certifications out there, which one's worth it for me? And what do I practically need to do in year one in order to have done the right actions? You know, that kind of advice for someone out there who isn't a big company who can just access that. And then thirdly, supporting farms with doing that kind of baselining, piloting and certification. So those are the three asks that we're reaching out to potential funders. Basically, you're reaching out to two types of organizations. One is a bit more green tech or green AI. There are a couple of AI funds out there for regenerative that we approached. And then the other one is more, let's say, conventional donor aid funding for development projects. Be a third area, which is just people who are really interested in seeing innovation in the space of carbon and nature in the agriculture sector, which could be any angel or anyone who is interested in seeing the right things happening and taking a lead on topics that they care about.
Tea lands in some parts of the world are more depleted than others, such as Sri Lanka, where ongoing production has continued for 150 years. We see similar issues in Africa and, of course, in India. Could you please speak a little about where regenerative practices can have the most significant impact? Which regions most benefit from your initiative?
That is a bit of a philosophical question, I think. When your soils are very, very depleted, obviously you have the biggest bang for the buck from a soil perspective. If you then go, stop conventional production, go to organic, really look after your soil and change a lot of practices on your farm, it will also take quite a while to restore the whole ecosystem. Because if you've been farming conventionally for, as you said, 100 years, you're with all the spraying, et cetera, there is very little inherent biodiversity left in that land. As we see many of the big feed farms, they're very much monoculture and there's very little strips of nature left. So I think it would take a while before there is some kind of ecosystem balance restored on those farms. So if we then go to the other extreme, someone was already farming maybe biodynamically or organically their tea, and now they want to have a strong focus on soil fertility and ecosystem resilience. They just need to add a couple additional things or implement a couple of changes in their practices, like really avoiding a loss of soil, having no cover on the soils and integrating, biodiversity corridors and things like that. It's just some specific things, and then their system could really, really stabilize and become strong from a biodiversity perspective. So I think from a soil perspective, the former, the conventional ones will probably see the biggest leap quickly. Earning income from soil carbon is greater for conventional because it's so depleted initially. But earning income from the whole regenerative system and biodiversity might be greater for a farm that already has some biodiversity on it.
That's helpful. I appreciate your response. The government of Kenya recently ordered the nation's tea factories to halt Rainforest Alliance audits. Generally, are third-party certifiers adopting regenerative standards?
I think the regenerative parties out there that we are talking to are friends. They're trying to help. They're trying to do something that is very much aligned with what we're doing. But there's still, you know, third parties that have certain levies to pay or, you know, auditing fees if you do them. Some of them are just have a framework language. But I think there's something inherently totally wrong from a farmer's perspective with how the whole compliance and certification space works then. So I'm really quite glad that you brought this up with Rainforest Alliance. And the reason that is I think I come from a consulting background. Right. And you did used to do these projects or analysis based on 80-20. So you try to get 80% of it right and not bother about the last final piece of analysis. And the whole approach about audits, of course, is to be error free. So you audit every single parcel or every single piece of land. And because you don't, as a certifier, want to be left with a risk factor that there is potentially something wrong in that last piece of land. And that's the total risk avoidance. But having no risk in the audit system is highly, highly inefficient and very costly. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, that hit the nail on the head, Annabelle. The pursuit of zero risk in certification audits leads to inefficiency and high costs. Certifiers spend only a few days inspecting farms, yet farmers invest heavily to comply. Then comes a $3,000 to $4,000 bill ultimately passed on to consumers. Meanwhile, consumer trust is declining. Willingness to pay a sustainability premium has dropped from 40% to just 27%.
What I think needs to happen to go from a system that is highly inefficient because it's uncomfortable with any kind of risks to a system that does spot checks and therefore is like we do for food. So basically there is, you take a sample of farms that you go to every year. Like, so for example, in Nepal, most of the farms are already organically, farming, but they're having such a hard time getting the certifiers out there because of the remoteness, et cetera. And in cooperatives, that's even worse because of the small plots, et cetera. So if each cooperative, you know, wouldn't quite know when the certifier comes, but they know every couple of years they're going to show up. And then it's kind of, you know, they can take a decision what percentage of their certification, their outstanding farms, et cetera, in Nepal they want to sample at any point in, you know, any year. If Nepal is a country that never cheats, then they probably do very little. If it's a country that always cheats, they'd make it higher. So I want to from this. Every single entity needs to be certified every year because that's so inefficient for all of us.
Do you have examples of regenerative certified tea farms that generate a return on investment? Not necessarily in actual profits, but at least holistically.
For my farmers, it's too early to say that. But from the other ones that are regenerative organic certified, for example, White Orchard, we should ask them their numbers. I think for their brand, it's been a huge thing. At a farm level, now it all depends on how you do your economics, right? Whether that at the farm level shows a business case and a return on investment or not. But I think what I'm trying to say is that it's a holistic equation, not just the tea alone, because I think that is, unless you have very, very premium tea, and this is where it brings us to, if you're able to sell that tea into very premium markets, then that's a different equation. But a lot of the farms we're talking to, that isn't necessarily the market that they're selling into. The challenge with the standard, in my view, is that it's so gray zone. You're still allowed to use agrochemicals, but only a certain time. This is why it's difficult from a consumer perspective, I think, but also from a environmental perspective, because there is no yes or no. We don't do this anymore because it's 2025. We don't spray at all anymore because we have other objectives. And I think that's a challenge with the Rainforest Alliance standard, particularly for me, that it's not a clear standard with regard to these practices. Yeah. And then therefore a questionable one with regard to regenerative altogether.
Produced by Atavita Studios, connect your voice to the world.